Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fast Talk.
Street Talk.
Mike Graham.
Fighting the good fight with all his might. Providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid Talk.
Hot Talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On the app, on your smart speaker, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. It's Friday morning, the sky is blue, the sun is out, spring is definitely in the air. It's a great day for chopping down loads of trees and making way for some more cycle lanes, that's what I say. I'm pleased to bring you the news that the leader of Plymouth Council, who we reported on just the other day, who ordered the cutting down and the complete laying to waste of an entire sort of green space in Plymouth, has decided he's going to step down from the position of running the council and from the position of giving the executive order to cut all the hundreds of trees down, despite local protests, despite the people saying we don't want this to happen, despite the fact that it's incredibly ungreen to do so. Anyway, we'll bring you more on that. Richard Bingley is his name. £12 million is the amount they're spending on regeneration. First stage of regeneration, cut down all the trees. I mean, for God's sake, what an absolutely ludicrous idea. Richard Titus here. We're going to find out why so many places around the country are doing this. We'll also tell you where the best place in the country is to live, but we will also tell you why Sir Keir Starmer and his latest kind of tilt at the law and order processes of this country is completely and utterly unfounded, completely and utterly baseless, and completely and utterly ludicrous. He's painting himself as some kind of modern day Batman, some kind of caped crusader who's going to save us all from serious crime, because he used to be the director of public prosecutions. Well, I'm sorry, his record speaks for itself. His record would suggest that he is nothing like a caped crusader. He's more like the Joker, to be honest. 0344 499 1000. We will also talk as well about the interest rates. We'll also talk about the Belfast framework. We will also talk about the grilling of Boris Johnson and much else besides. 0344 499 1000. We're going to take a little trip across the channel to see why the French are getting so worked up about Emmanuel Macron. We'll talk to Mike Sullivan, the Prime Minister of the Sun, as well. We'll get his view on what's going on with Keir Starmer and what also is planned with the police force as well in this country. Gareth A. Davis joins us a bit later on to talk about the most unwoke sport of all. That is, of course, the situation with boxing, which is still remarkably unwoke. We'll talk about that. Plus, Harry Kane, the greatest footballer ever? I don't think so. I'm just going to say it. He has no business being even spoken about in the same breath as Jimmy Greaves. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Let's get it on. Welcome to Friday. It's been another remarkable week, I have to say, in the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Incredible news stories breaking, incredible developments happening all over the place. Let's talk right now to Richard Tice, the man of the moment. We forgot also to mention that you managed to relaunch the Reform Party at the beginning of the week. So long ago.
Good morning, Mike. What a week it has been.
I know,
that's
incredible.
Right. It feels like a month since Monday when, that's right, I had a press conference welcoming the band getting back together with a number of former Brexit Party MEPs, led by the likes of Anne Widdecombe and Ben Habib, coming back because we're standing up for Britain. Mm. And the timing in terms of this week, the importance, of course, of the Windsor Framework assessments, the DUP quite rightly, in our view, rejecting the Windsor Framework, the ERG likewise, because surprise, surprise, it turns out that in our view, Rishi Sunak has much more seriously misled Parliament over the real terms of the Windsor framework than Boris Johnson his party line.
And that's a very good point because, you know, the Westminster bubble maniacs have been obsessed with Boris this week, haven't they? All the papers have been writing about it, front-page news, sketch writers, five pages on it. I mean, I think most people in this country care an awful lot more about what the real government's actually doing as opposed to what Boris did years ago.
And it was a deliberate manoeuvre by this government that tried to basically sneak through a vote just on the Stormont break, not on the whole deal, on Wednesday at the same time, of course, as Boris's his shenanigans in front of the Parliamentary Procedures Committee. And look, the reality is that is so serious, and the fact that 22 Tory MPs voted against it, I think, is significant, and the quantity who abstained. And what's remarkable, of course, is that if Labour had actually voted against what is a bad deal for the United Kingdom, then things could have got very, very sticky indeed. But once again, Keir Starmer completely and utterly let the country down and showed his complete naivety in terms of a political positioning. He blew it.
Did he not say before the agreement was even published that he was going to vote with it?
He did.
Having not read it.
What sort of negotiating tactic is that? I mean, Who does that? Who says, I'll sign whatever you put in front of me. This guy's supposed to be a lawyer. He's supposed
Mr.
to be a
Forensic.
Former...
They don't say
that much anymore, do they? He wasn't very... I mean, just unbelievable.
Mm. Yeah, because it also turns out that the framework spells different things for different people. So you pick up the French version or the EU version, says something completely different to the version that we were shown by Rishi Sunak.
And
utterly misleading.
And that's what got us onto it very quickly, because immediately after the original press conference by von der Leyen talking about Dear Rishi and that loving, we looked at the EU side of it and realised that the whole thing was a stitch up and a con. Mm. And so it's proved when the lawyers got into the text. So look, I think it's actually incredibly serious what's happened, and that's why we're so focused on reminding everybody of just the absolute horrors of that that framework. Yeah. There are some people who genuinely think it's actually worse than the protocol.
Yeah. They've done away with the protocol sort of willy-nilly. Well, that's what the DUP says, isn't it?
Yeah, essentially, but actually legally, they haven't. It's sort of contained within that. It's incredibly complicated, but suffice to say, it doesn't do what Rishi Sunak said it did on the tin.
No.
So in our view, he misled Parliament.
Yes, interesting point. There's any number of people who could be accused of misleading Parliament. I mean, I would have thought, for example, that as soon as Boris Johnson admitted misleading Parliament, that should have been the end of it. They shouldn't have bothered having a huge hearing at which, you know, Bernard Jenkin and others could, you know, hoist their own petard up there and treat the former Prime Minister with utter disdain and contempt just because they wanted to do it. I thought it was a shocking spectacle, really.
And it's worth reminding ourselves that this inquiry into him misleading Parliament was launched in April last year. So it's taken 9 or 10 months to come to this stage. And now, having had that 3 or 4 hour grilling, they're going to take apparently another 3 or 4 months to make a decision.
Yeah.
I mean, if this is the glacial pace at which Westminster and the civil service and Whitehall works, it's not surprising the country's in the state that it's in, because nothing happens in any form of sensible time frame.
Right.
And the cost and the delays, when what we should be focusing on is actually the really important issues, the utter failures of lockdown, the catastrophes that led to.
Yes.
It's amazing how in Westminster...
And the cost.
Nobody wants to talk about that. No one wants to drill in to why decisions were made, learning quick lessons and turning them round. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
None of the MPs want to look at that.
Right. No, people were saying to me yesterday, oh, you cared about it at the time. Well, yes, I did care about it at the time. And I did wonder about what was going on inside of Downing Street. But not because I care how much cake was eaten or how many bottles of wine were opened. I do care, however, about how policy was made, why mistakes were literally sort of just shoved under the carpet. And particular policies were adopted, knowing full well that they had no scientific basis.
This is the point, and that has come out time and again, and Westminster and the mainstream media are are sort of wriggling and squirming and just trying to completely ignore it.
Absolutely right.
Which is including Sir Keir Starmer. I mean, he's had a pretty bad week, actually.
He's had a terrible week in multiple ways. He's had a terrible week. And the great line that he thought he came out with, which was, the only criminal investigation Rishi Sunak's ever been involved in is the one into his Partygate problems, which is so lame as to not even be worth mentioning. But Sunak's response, which was, well, you probably know more than I do because you've been talking to Sue Gray a lot more often than I have, which actually was a lot better. But speaking of just of matters arising, I'm looking at a piece of footage here in front of me from France, Paris. There's about 20 police vans racing to the Elysee Palace, where Emmanuel Macron lives, to protect it from the baying hordes of people. hundreds of thousands of people out on the streets of France, not just in Paris, but they're in Bordeaux, they're in other parts of the country as well. Charles, of course, the king, is off next week to go there. People are going, are you sure?
Is this a good idea?
You know, maybe just go to Dover and wave to them across the channel and say, you know, very nice to see you. Maybe have a mid-channel meeting or something. But I think going to France, seriously, might be quite dangerous.
I mean, it is extraordinary. The French do love a good protest. There's nothing more they love than to put a few bales of hay and straw onto the Champs-Élysées.
Setting fire to some cars and
there's cars. Yeah, I mean, there have been some extraordinary footage. And, but the way Macron imposed this seemingly actually fairly... I mean, it's not that controversial to lift the pension age from 62 to 64 when you think where it is in most other...
Well, it wouldn't be in this country
or indeed many other developed nations. But and indeed, I believe it was in his manifesto when he was re-elected president. But the fact that the parliament basically wouldn't pass it through, and so he imposed a draconian rule so that essentially acting like a dictator, he could pass it.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable stuff, and it certainly...
And he's been treating them, and he's been sort of goading them as well. Let's move on to speaking of dictators. How about this guy, Councillor Bingley, Richard Bingley, who was until pretty much this week the leader of Plymouth City Council, a Tory. He's now announced that he's stepping down, not least, I'm sure, due to the furore over this cutting down of the trees in this particular section of Plymouth, where they wanted to make it possible to have a bus lane that ran all the way down to the shore. We highlighted it on this show, so I'm going to claim it as another victory for the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. He says this, I've always said I'm not a full-time politician, thank God. I don't seek to be. I'm just an individual who is passionate and ambitious for Plymouth. If others feel they can run our glorious ocean city better, then that's great with me. Over to you. I urge my successors not to sink back into petty party political infighting, as that sad tendency has held back our city for so many years in the past. When good people see that, they soon politely walk away. Well, that's all very well, but he's already
destroyed. The damage is done. On the one hand,
vandalism.
On the one hand, credit to him for recognising that he's got it completely wrong, and he's taking responsibility. There is some accountability there. That's a good thing. The appalling thing is that he didn't have the nous to realise that this was an absurd idea in the starting point and stop it. And once that is done, once you chop down trees, it's done, it's gone, it's finished.
Right.
And the real focus now needs to be on other areas, other councils who are thinking of doing the same thing. And there's one in Cambridge where they're looking to chop down, I think, about 500.
Yeah.
Trees in an ancient orchard.
Right?
Ancient orchard. I think it's apples and fruit trees, and it just seems utterly appalling. And they're sort of blithely carrying on, all in the name of climate change.
Yeah.
I mean, where does it work where you cut down trees that essentially consume CO2?
Yeah.
That's a good thing. That's
right.
Natural. And replace it with concrete. I mean, I know you're a man who likes concrete to grow.
I'm not against concrete, but here's the thing, that my argument against the tree sustainability argument, right, is that how long do you think it's going to take to build up the orchard again once you've cut all the trees down?
Hundreds of years.
You know, trees don't grow that fast. I'm afraid nobody's found the elixir of life for that.
Yeah.
So you might as well concrete the whole place over and be
but
done
no,
with
we,
it.
We should, I mean, we just, it's an absolute insanity. And I think actually it's a sort of, it's just another classic example of the absurdity of some of the measures that have been taken in pursuit of the net zero nirvana.
Yes, absolutely right. Speaking of which, we've got Sadiq Khan to discuss coming up, because he, of course, has claimed that 30,000 people may be adversely affected by his expanded ultra-low emission zone. The RAC today have said it's 700,000 people, not 30,000 people, and he's so busy, you know, celebrating Eid Mubarak, you know, that he hasn't even bothered to actually consult with the people who have said to him, we don't want this.
Well, and actually he deliberately fixed and ignored the representations during the consultation on this.
He did.
And I think it's utterly appalling. I think there's a lot of water to pass under this particular bridge, and I suspect that something's going to happen.
Yeah,
because you've got the legal cases by various of the councils, and this
I think he's taken on too much this time.
I think
he's
good,
lose.
And hopefully there'll be some accountability against him in the, because it's only about 14 months until the next mayoral election, so there is some real pressure building up on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
right.
It just shouldn't be. It's utter insanity that affects the least well off, the poorest.
Yeah.
And
it is happening all over the country. We'll be talking about this. All of that business of pedestrianisation of places, the knocking down of trees, which is clearly some kind of policy which people have picked up on in local councils. We've also got the news today that council tax goes over £2,000 for an awful lot of people as well, even as you get an even worse service. Absolutely unbelievable. Richard Tice is here. We'll be back with more after this.
Nationwide, by your side, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Change of menu. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Lots to do. Here's one from Helen in Market Drayton. Why would anyone want it known you're living in a nice place? You wouldn't want mass migration from London, would you? Like the Welsh town brought back lock, stock and barrel. She's in Market Drayton. I don't know what Market Drayton's like these days, but apparently the best place to live in Britain is Wadhurst, down in Sussex, which the only thing I can tell you about really is it's very close to where my kids live, not far from where they go to school, and it is a lovely part of the world. But one of the things they say is nice about it is that it has a lovely dark night sky.
Right.
Which doesn't sound particularly unusual, although if you live in London, you don't see the sky. I must admit, whenever I go to Sussex, as I'm going to do later on, the sky is beautiful at night. You do see some incredible star constellations.
Absolutely, but, which I think, of course, is the reality all over the countryside, all over the many parts of the UK.
Also, it's good to get out of London, because we were talking yesterday about the mask wearing in London. A lot of people reacted saying, yeah, every time I visit London now, I see an awful lot more people wearing masks than I do in any other part of Britain where I go. So London is fast becoming now a kind of island of madness, isn't it?
An island of metropolitan mad snowflakes, maybe.
Snowflake Ramonas and Labour Party supporters. I mean, this is any place they live.
It's possible you see it sort of a lot on the tube, and on the one hand, you want to sort of go up and say, why are you doing that?
Yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, you sort of say, look, it's
just Julie Hartley-Brewer that does that. Well, I mean, if you ever go on the tube with her, I tell you what.
Move to the next carriage if you're wearing a mask.
Yeah, you don't want to be seen wearing one. Absolutely hilarious. Let's talk about Labour, though. Let's talk about Sir Keir Starmer, because yesterday, another speech, he keeps making them, and mostly they're forgettable. But yesterday, trying to paint himself as this kind of caped crusader of crime, the man that's going to rid Britain of crime, because he used to be the Director of Public Prosecutions. Absolute madness.
It really is extraordinary, because his track record when he was the DPP was actually pretty woeful. This, of course, is the guy that successfully, when he was before that spell, who successfully enabled migrants to receive benefits.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't forget, that back in 2020, just a few years ago, he actually signed a letter asking and enabling the prevention of 50 foreign criminals, foreign offenders, from being deported. And the truth came out this week that 7 of those 50, it appears, have gone on to carry out further horrific crimes.
Very serious crimes, yeah.
Violence, drug dealing, stalking.
Yeah.
And you know, this is what he thinks is being tough on crime and criminals in the course of crime. Completely out of touch with the wishes of the British people. I think, absolutely, up and down the country. If you're a... If you've come here and enjoyed the generosity and hospitality of the United Kingdom as someone from overseas, you then commit a crime, frankly, you've blown your chance.
But he also specialises, doesn't he, in getting people off planes who are dangerous to keep them here, like the Jamaican guy who's been deported, who was saved from being deported thanks to a letter that he signed, along with a load of other, you know, kind of serious lovies, you might say, from the worlds of showbiz. And that guy then went on to murder somebody.
Just unbelievable. Mm. I want foreign criminals deported. I don't see why we should pay for them in our prisons that are already overcrowded. I want them gone and prevented from coming here ever again.
Yeah.
And that's what other sensibly run countries do, and that's exactly what we should do. People need to know that we're not a soft touch. But Keir Starmer, far from being tough on crime. He promotes a soft touch on crime.
But what he likes to do is criminalise people who are not criminals. Like, for example, the way he went after the press at the behest of Tom Watson, who was after all sorts of honours because he was really, really determined to crack down on what he thought was some illicit practices being done by members of the press. He also, of course, got involved in Operation Midland because he had said way at the beginning of his time as a DPP that people should be believed. If you came forward to say that you were a victim of some kind of sex assault or sex crime, that you should be believed before anybody else. And that has led to a culture, I'm afraid, as difficult as these issues are, of anyone who goes to the police now, of basically going, oh, OK, well, it must be true, therefore let's go after, particularly if it's high-profile people, let's go and arrest a load of people and say that they're all, you know, paedophiles.
And it's completely wrong. You should be listened to. The claims should be investigated by highly trained specialist personnel within the police who can quickly get to the bottom of the veracity of the claims or not.
Right.
And who've got experience in dealing with it. And I'm afraid, up and down the country, that is why so many of these cases end up in a really bad place.
We
know we can do so much better. But time and again, if you get the wrong sort of steer from someone like Keir Starmer in a leadership position, then things go badly wrong.
They do. And look at the number of things he's had to U-turn on. The next one will be this transgender story, won't it? Because he's the guy who initially couldn't identify what a woman was. He's still not really sure. And still, Labour politicians will say, it's whoever wants to be a woman. Well, I'm sorry. According to Lord Sebastian Coe and the World Athletics Organisation.
Absolutely right. And I've put out a tweet this morning about it because Stonewall still think that trans women should be able to compete in women's competitions, which of course is utter lunacy. Keir Starmer doesn't know what a woman is. But it was interesting this morning, Wes Streeting starting to row back because Labour realised that this could actually really work against them towards the general election.
Well, it will. I mean, you spend a lot of time on doorsteps. You go to real parts of Britain where real people live as opposed to the kind of, you know, the leafy parts of North London that Keir Starmer inhabits. And people don't care. They say people who are running against each other should probably all be women. You know, you shouldn't have some bloke running, pretending he's a woman, and saying, well, I'm going to win now.
But look, common sense up and down the country, people in pubs and clubs and on the bus stops talking about this stuff think that Westminster's utterly insane in this whole issue. Completely and utterly insane. Basic common sense. If you've got a penis, you are a man.
Yeah.
It's not difficult.
Right.
And I think if Keir Starmer can't admit that in the run-up to the next election, then I think his opponents will absolutely hammer him.
But even more important than that particular piece of information, it's if you have gone through puberty, as far as the Athletics Board now is concerned, if you've gone through puberty as a male, you can never call yourself a female in any way, shape or form, no matter what happens to your genitalia.
Yeah. I think we're going to see the Labour Party row back big time. And I think it started today with Wes Streeting, who quite often is sort of he's almost like their sort of outlier flag carrier who'll sort of plant a pole and then gradually other parts of the shadow cabinet, Keir Starmer, start to follow him. So wait and see.
Yeah,
I think they know they're...
He's like the sort of Vinnie Jones figure, isn't he, from those movies?
He is, but I think that I think there's going to be a big shift from the Labour Party because...
But isn't it also interesting that in most recent times he's come out and started talking, because before he would let, you know, either Boris Johnson or Liz Truss just make fools of themselves and do nothing and watch his poll rating rise. He's now seeing the polls actually getting closer. Rishi Sunak being seen as somebody serious. You and I would probably disagree with that. But the general view Rishi Sunak...
There's no question he's serious.
He's stewarding the economy.
There's no question he's serious. He's just fundamentally, in my view, wrong on many issues and got no
and
ideology,
not very conservative.
No principles, and he's a sort of patrician socialist.
Yeah.
That's why I call him consocialist.
No, I get that, and you and I agree on that, I think. But the point is that he can't any longer just sit back and watch it all happening.
Correct.
And every time he opens his mouth and every time he opens the window slightly further, the light that shines in the Labour Party makes you see things you don't like.
Well, and the hypocrisy this week of the fact that he had his own special pension scheme.
Yeah.
Was blessed by some form of parliamentary instrument.
Yeah.
So that,
actually got his own law.
He literally has got his own law for his own pension scheme so that it didn't count towards his lifetime cap. I mean, just remarkable.
Mm.
I think he has now admitted in sort of rather humiliating embarrassment this and that he wouldn't take advantage of it. But just unbelievable that he thought that he could sort of vote against the lifting of the lifetime cap on pensions for everybody else whilst he could sort of sneak under the radar and not take advantage.
Typical Labour two-faced hypocrite. I'll say it, nobody else will. What about the tax return issue? I think it's very un-British to start showing your tax returns off to people. I don't like it.
Yeah, look, to be honest, I'm not interested. I'm just not interested. I just want I want people to focus on the real issues of making the right judgments, running the country properly, and when they've made mistakes, admitting it and changing course, rather than spending all this time, spending months and months working out who's going to release what tax return, when, in what... Just forget it. Just get on with making the right decisions, challenge them, do it, action.
Just do your job.
Just do your job.
Speaking of which, it's coming up on Sunday. You've got another big Sunday sermon.
Big Sunday sermon, absolutely. It'll be another absolute sizzler. Do not miss it.
Right.
I know what it's about. I tell you, it is going to be a sizzler. It's going to upset a few people.
Excellent. Like. That's what we like. Richard Tice, Sunday at 10 o'clock. Don't miss it. We'll be back with John Redwood after this.
The home of common sense. Talk radio and talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. You might have just seen there's a brand new Plank of the Week out tonight at 7pm, and it's not just any old Plank of the Week, because it is actually the 150th Plank of the Week, believe it or not. It's the third year we've been doing it. It's only just made it onto TV, of course, this year, or last year, I should say, back at the end of last year. Thanks very much indeed to the organisers here and the bosses at Talk TV. It started off as a YouTube show, and there's a clip from the... we'll play it to you a little bit later on in this show. A clip from that original first show, which, believe it or not, stars Russell Quirk. Incredibly, the man that we'll play in a bit. Yeah, we'll play because it's literally only just played. But listen, thank you very much indeed. Let's talk now, though, to Sir John Redwood, Conservative MP for Wokingham, because he's got some concerns, as we all do, about the stewarding of the economy, the way things are going. We saw the interest rate going up yesterday once more to 4.25%. I think the 11th rise in a row, which for some people isn't a particularly good sign. But how about this from, where are we? Somebody who says, oh, it's Dan in Epsom. Starmer is unelectable. The party is full of far-left MPs who hate our country and our traditions. He defended terrorists, including against British people. He wants to drag us kicking and screaming back to the European Union. He campaigned to keep foreign criminals in our country, who then went on to kill and to rape. You think things cannot get worse? Vote Labour, and they definitely will. I'm sure John Redwood would agree with that. Sir John, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. It's been another fascinating week in the fantastically varied world of politics. Where to begin? You've been expressing a bit of concern about the economy and the way growth is going. We've seen interest rates rise again yesterday, 4.25%. Where is it all going to go? And do you think we're heading in the right direction?
I think the slowdown is going to be... unpleasant, and I think the Bank of England is now squeezing money too much. This is the Bank of England which created much of the inflation by printing far too much money in 2021 and ignoring people like me who said, don't go on buying all those bonds, don't keep the interest rates right down at zero. This is not going to work, it's going to be inflationary. Now they've lurched the other way, and we saw them lurching again yesterday with a further 25 basis points increase when we know the economy is slowing. Just look at retail sales today. They're saying it's good because they're up a little bit on the month before. But on the year, they're down 3.5%. That's quite a squeeze because people have suffered with the rising energy prices and other prices, and their pay hasn't kept up.
And that's true. And I was noticing last night, just by chance, I happened to be looking at the price of a few things. And I think the retail sector itself has some blame to carry here, because an awful lot of prices have just been inflated, it seems to me, either by the manufacturers or by the retail shops themselves. Because I was looking at the price, for example, of water, basic water, still water that you buy in a bottle. It's practically doubled in the space of 6 months. You know, it's gone from, we used to be able to buy, say, 6 1.5-litre bottles for about £3. They're now talking about selling it for £5. And I can't believe that water has gone up to that degree.
But all the shops have faced very big increases in their own costs. And the energy costs have gone up a lot, the transport costs have gone up a lot, and their suppliers are charging them more. We'll have to see how the profit margins have worked out for the shops. But I don't think retailers are having a great profits bonanza shop by shop. I think they're struggling to keep up with the big increases in costs throughout the system. And it's very noticeable, I think, that it's the stores that are offering the keenest prices, offering the biggest discounts, that are doing the best. And they will be the ones that are profiting most, because they're attracting an awful lot more custom.
But we do
the
also
ones with the higher prices are suffering now.
But we do also know, because we heard the head of Tesco saying it actually on TV in an interview, that there are some manufacturers who are literally just adding numbers to what it is that they sell because they think they can get away with it.
Well, there may well be individual companies doing that, and I don't like that any more than anybody else does. But why have we got a general inflation? We got a general inflation because our central bank printed far too much money and kept interest rates, particularly on longer debt, far too low for too long. Now they're giving us the opposite treatment. They are doing an awful lot of damage quite deliberately. How do they stop an inflation? They do it by slowing the economy down. They do it by putting people's mortgages up. They do it by trying to stop people having enough money to buy all the things they would like.
Mm. Could Jeremy Hunt have done better in his budget statement to try and create a bit more growth?
Yes, I think he could have done more. I think he was too circumscribed by the forecasts of the OBR, which are unreliable in the extreme. And tending to be on the pessimistic side at the moment, looking out for the more distant years. And I think he should break free. I wanted him to increase the VAT threshold for small business so that many of those small businesses could expand instead of having to shut down halfway through the year because they've reached the threshold and they don't want to go through it. I thought he could ease the taxation on the self-employed. And I think the big increase in business tax, the 31% hike in the amount the company has to pay on its profits next year compared with this, was over the top, and it will not collect us a lot more revenue. It will actually damage the revenues from business, and it will mean that quite a lot of companies don't invest here or don't come here.
Yeah, well, you've already seen some of that as well. Also, we've got council tax rising above £2,000 for a lot of people for the first time. I mean, I know that it's just another additional cost to people, but still, the council fees now are so ludicrous for what you get in terms of, you know, I know that we're supposed to pay for education, the police, social care, bin collecting and all of that. But most people I talk to say that their council services have actually got worse in the last 2 to 3 years. And why are we paying more money for them?
Well, indeed. I mean, councils like Liberal Democrat controlled Wokingham have been cutting the services on things like the refuse service, which we value, but they haven't been cutting back on their own costs. I mean, we've got lots of empty offices all around the country now, far more office space than council workers want to use because they want to work from home in the main, but we're still having to pay all the rents on those. Quite a lot of councils went off on a great borrowing and buying splurge, buying up lots of shop properties and office properties. They're now losing money on those, and it's a great pity. They did all that. Some of them, of course, have come spectacularly undone by discovering that the properties they bought aren't worth anything like what they paid for, and they've now run out of money.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? An awful lot of small towns in this country as well have got high streets which are impossible to park in and are filled with sort of empty shop fronts.
Well, that's right. A lot of councils make it worse, as you imply, by reducing the amount of road space, closing roads, narrowing roads, making parking very expensive. Also, quite a lot of car parks now. Very difficult to be able to pay in the car parks. The technology often doesn't work. And I was hearing a case the other day where someone had spent a little while trying to pay a car park before driving in and parking. Couldn't do so, so decided she'd have to go elsewhere. And she got a charge for the time she was spent in the car park trying to pay. Just absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, it really is absolutely maddening. And also, you can fight these things and you can sometimes get off them, but it's time consuming and it shouldn't be necessary.
It's very unfriendly to the customers. So it then makes people think, well, that's another reason why I should buy something online and not go to the local town centre to use the shops. And then, of course, the coffee bars and the restaurants don't get so much business either. Mm.
Absolutely right. Lord Agnew has spoken out this morning and talking about how much COVID fraud there was. I had Grant Shapps on this show some weeks ago in which he said that they were clawing back as much of it as they could. I said, well, you haven't clawed back much. He said, oh, no, we're beginning to get it back. According to Lord Agnew, only 1% of the money that was granted to illicit companies and fraudulent characters has been recovered. That seems to be a pretty awful record. 99% of the money taken away fraudulently from the COVID funds. We're never going to see again. It's outrageous, isn't it?
Well, I hope they'll do better than that. I can't understand why, if they've identified it as fraud, they can't do better than that at getting it back.
No. Well, you'd like to think so. Finally, well, what did you make of the kangaroo court, as some people called it this week, of Boris Johnson and the situation regarding COVID and the Partygate inquiry and Harriet Harman and all of that? I said I thought it was a ludicrous waste of government money, ludicrous waste of public money, didn't need to happen. We learned nothing.
Well, I didn't watch it because I was very busy dealing with the arguments over the Northern Ireland Protocol, because I was extremely worried about some of the changes in that agreement with the EU, because I want us to be free of EU laws. And I was obviously also busy with the budget resolutions, as was much of Parliament. I will read the report when the committee finishes its work. I just hope they do a good job and a timely job. But I agree with you that it could become a ridiculous saga and a major diversion when we need to concentrate on the things you and I have been talking about this morning.
Yes, absolutely right. So, John, thank you very much indeed. Have a great weekend. Sir John Redwood, MP for Wokingham, Conservative with a proper capital C, who's not at all happy with the slow rates of growth and indeed the rather slow recovery, which is being managed, or you might say mismanaged, by Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak. We'll take some calls on that. 0344 499 1000 is the number. We've got loads of great tweets here and messages as well about Keir Starmer, amongst other things. This is Talk TV.
Edgy talk, plain talk, unrivaled talk. Mike Graham, the only radio show you can count on for a proper serving of good old-fashioned common sense. In search of the perfect debate.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On the app, on your smart speaker, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk TV. Spring would appear to have sprung, ladies and gentlemen. They did say it was going to be horrible this week, and it was horrible in parts, but it's actually looking a lot better today, and hopefully the weekend will be set fair. We shall see what it's like in your neck of the woods. We can bring you that breaking news once again that the decision to postpone the trip to France for King Charles and consort Camilla has in fact been made. According to the Elysee Palace, the decision was taken by the French and British governments together after a telephone exchange between the President of the Republic and the King this morning. Those are their words. It will be rescheduled as soon as possible. But due to the day of action against pension reform planned for Tuesday, King Charles' state visit to France has been postponed. Very sensible too. There's some trouble getting to France and back as well. So we'll be checking in with Ben Clatworthy from the Times later on in the show to find out just what is actually going on. If you're hoping to get away for Easter, if you're hoping to get away anytime between now and then, whether that's going to be difficult or not. 0344 499 1000 is the number. We're going to talk to Councillor Paul Osborne, the leader of Harrow Council, in a moment. But also, we want to talk about a breaking news story as well from yesterday, actually, and the continuing saga today of a wealthy politician who's been found guilty of an organ trafficking plot. As if trafficking people here wasn't bad enough. On the small boats, bringing people here to be involved in sex slavery or to be involved in the drug trade or to be involved in all manner of dodginess on the black economy. This guy, a Nigerian politician, actually trafficked somebody here, a young man, to have his kidney taken out and transplanted into his daughter, who had a kidney problem. It's an absolutely extraordinary story. It was at the Old Bailey yesterday. We'll find out what that's all about coming up a little bit later on as well. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Also, we will be travelling across to France to catch up with Gavin Mortimer to find out how bad the situation actually is there. But it looks pretty bad last night with all sorts of things being set on fire, running battles between the police and the protesters and tear gas being fired all over the place, baton charges. Dreadful situation in France, really, even for them, looking pretty bad. But let's talk about the ULEZ once again, because we just heard from our friend down in Wales, in Bridgend, who was telling us that they're talking about introducing road charging in parts of Wales, and it might be a reality sooner rather than later. So never ever think that when we talk about the ultra low emission zone in London that it only affects people in London, because it doesn't. It will affect you wherever you live, wherever you are, because they're coming for you, I'm afraid. And thankfully, people like Paul Osborne, the leader of Harrow Council, are sticking up for the motorists and sticking up for the consumer in this one, in the fight against Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London. Councillor Paul, a very good morning to you.
Good
Good morning.
We heard from Sadiq Khan some time ago that this expansion of the zone, which takes it out into parts of the sort of surrounding counties of outside of London, really, that it would affect 30,000 people or something. It turns out, according to the RAC, that it's more like 700,000 people that are going to be affected by this. That's, even for him, quite an understatement.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what you expect from the mayor of London, I'm afraid. He says one thing and the reality is somewhat different.
Yeah. I mean, it's more than somewhat different. I mean, it's by a factor of sort of 20 and a bit different. So many people have complained about this this idea. So many people have demonstrated about it. We've now got what we're seeing is a bit of vandalism going on to some of the cameras that are being put up. We don't encourage that, but you can't really blame people for doing it. What's the latest situation with you and your fellow council leaders who are trying to oppose it?
So we're now going through the court process. We're waiting to hear from the court if we get permission to take our judicial review to a hearing. The Mayor of London's asked for that to be sped up, and we're quite happy for this to be resolved as soon as possible. We think we've got a very strong case. We think that this was the wrong decision, made the wrong way. He ignored the and manipulated the consultation that he did for all Londoners, and this has to be stopped.
Yeah. I mean, this is the same mayor, by the way, who has accused those who are against the expansion of ULEZ to be sort of right-wing nutters and fascists and, you know, COVID deniers. I mean, that was quite an extraordinary statement he made in Ealing Town Hall, wasn't it?
I mean, it was incredible. And when you look at the people who are opposing this, you know, I've been talking to Unison members, Unite members, GMB members from around outside London who are finding that their members are going to be massively affected by this. You know, these are people who have to get to Heathrow at midnight or get to Heathrow at 4 a.m. in the morning, work a shift and then come back. And they, you know, can't afford to change their car. They can't afford to upgrade their car. And they're on a low-paid job. They're doing it at difficult hours. And they're just getting this incredible charge slapped on them day after day after day.
Yes. And we were talking to Gareth Bacon, MP, about it yesterday, because obviously his constituency is not a million miles from Harrow. It's down in the sort of south, down near Alpington in Kent. And he was saying, you know, this is not about air pollution, because it really isn't. Because if you're really convinced that you need to stop people polluting the air, you would be stopping them from driving, as opposed to actually just charging them to pollute the air.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, for example, in a Range Rover being chauffeur driven around, that's apparently fine. But if you're in an old Ford Fiesta just going, you know, round the corner to your doctor's surgery or you're doing your shopping or whatever, you have to pay this charge. And it makes no account also of just how much people use it. If you drive all day in a gas-guzzling car, you pay £12.50. If you don't, you then just go round the corner, you pay £12.50.
Yeah.
The whole thing is so flawed, so wrong and so unfair to the people who really can't afford this imposition. Mm.
And as I mentioned, the fact is that many cameras are already now being put in. Are you aware of any cameras being installed in your borough?
We don't think so yet. There were some that are kind of on the border where neighbouring boroughs have given permission already and signed an agreement with the mayor. The mayor is talking about just putting them in anyway, regardless of the borough's wishes. That's something that we're talking to our lawyers about to see what options we have. But we're also conscious that we don't want to spend any more taxpayers' money than is necessary in doing all this. What we have asked the mayor to do is to hold off his self-imposed deadline of the 28th of August and actually let this court case play itself out, and then he can go ahead. Otherwise, he has to put them all in and then take them all out again.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? And I mean, as far as the fund that the government has set up, basically, in order to kind of help this scheme for households to somehow get exemptions from this. How does that actually work and how do people apply to it?
I mean, I think a lot of these schemes, the detail isn't quite clear yet. I know the mayor's scheme is massively oversubscribed, doesn't help people who live just outside London, and doesn't really take account of the fact that, you know, it's just not enough money sometimes to get a new car. I mean, people are really having difficulty selling their existing car if it's not ULEZ compliant. And there's also massive issues around the availability of new cars.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I mean, in addition to that, and I know that you're facing your own sort of plight here in terms of the actual amount of money that you're having to charge people, but council tax going up on the front page of the Times this morning, over £2,000 for an awful lot of people, rate rise for the 11th time. I mean, it really is quite an extraordinary amount of money that people are being asked to pay for their council tax. A lot of people say to me that the services they get are actually decreasing rather than increasing.
I mean, the challenge of council tax and the challenge of council finances is it's the cost of adult social care that we're having to deal with. Yeah. It's a really big problem. And I think, you know, the government tried to address it and then it got sidetracked by doing it. I think it really needs a national solution. At the moment, the burden of adult social care is predominantly falling on council taxpayers through the council tax. And I think we need to look at that system and look at how it works. Mm. Otherwise, what you'll find is more and more of the council money just goes on that one area. And that means the council tax goes up. And also you're less able to spend money on the other areas that the council is expected to deliver.
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem, isn't it? And I've just got a note here from Malcolm up in Morpeth. He says there's been a ULEZ in Newcastle since the end of January, which I wasn't aware of. So it is absolutely creeping into all parts of the country, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, these things are part of a plan to try and stop people using cars. You know, there's low traffic neighbourhoods. There's entire sections of roads being taken over by cycle lanes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And then there's ULEZ. And, you know, this is some inner London mayor deciding that outer London is the same as inner London. The fact is you can probably manage much more easily in inner London than outer London without a car. You know, the car ownership is much lower in inner London. As when you move to outer London, it goes up to about 70-80%, whereas it's below 50% in some inner London areas. I just think, you know, there is a war against the motorists, like you said in your introduction. That in the planning system, they're trying to make sure there's not enough parking spaces for people when they build new houses to try and stop people having cars.
Yeah,
and it just doesn't understand the reality of life for many people who have to get their kids to school, who have to get to work in different places where maybe public transport isn't as much of an option. And it just has to stop.
It really must. It is incredible that the war on motorists is going seemingly sort of unchecked. But Paul, thanks very much indeed for your help. Paul Osborne, leader of Harrow Council, there, still fighting the good fight on behalf of motorists, on behalf of citizens of this country, who are being sort of rolled over and run over into the ground by Sadiq Khan and his crazed obsession with net zero and getting rid of cars all over the place. Paul has texted into to Talk TV here. He says, the reality of road charges is going to hit everyone in the UK, in my view. Everyone is asleep if they think this is a London problem, although Sadiq Khan is also going to hit motorists with his Silvertown tunnel plans as well. You should have had someone at the conference last week in Europe where all the business and members of councils went for a jolly to help each other implement so many plans hitting the motorists. There is big money in this area. Well, this is the thing. I mean, I actually said, didn't I, towards the end of last year when they were talking about Jeremy Hunt coming in as Chancellor, I said, how are they going to find any more ways of actually taxing us? Well, Sadiq Khan has found several new ways of taxing people. And also, as you heard us telling you there, up in Newcastle, they've got an ultra low emission zone in operation since the end of January. Unbelievable. Now, we were talking earlier about ring doorbells, and I've had quite a lot of interesting suggestions as to how this could be happening. But let's talk to Andrew, who's a new caller from Wakefield, who says that he might have the answer. Andrew, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. Very nice to speak to you.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the show. What can you tell me about these ring doorbell mysteries?
Well, it's not a great mystery, I'm afraid. It's very simple to purchase what they call a deauthorer, which is a spelt in, I think it's more of an American spelling. It's deauther, and that simulates an attack on a Wi-Fi system. Okay. So these are highly illegal, but they are available on most websites.
It sounds a bit like one of those radar blockers you used to be able to get for your car. You know, when a police gun, radar gun fired at you, can block it.
Oh, I'm sure I wouldn't know about that.
No, me neither. I've only heard that. I've heard it.
So these are freely available, and they can be bought in a kit form once called a node MCU from one of the, well, I won't name all the websites,
okay.
But we use them every day. These are sold as experimental chips. Okay. They can be portable. And of course, with a Ring doorbell, there is only one or two versions of the Ring doorbell. I think there's about seven models out there now, but there's only one or two that actually work on a internet over wired access. So it comes down the power cable. Wow. Now that can't be jammed. So okay. there are very expensive versions of the Ring doorbell. But of course, any time the Wi-Fi signal is broken to one of these doorbell devices, then it stops recording because it relies on the constant internet connection.
Right.
So quite simply, turning off your router would also kill
would
the Wi-Fi.
Would have the same effect. And what sort of form does this thing take? Do you wear it? Is it like something you carry? Is it not a phone app or anything like that?
Well, it is actually. There is a phone app that runs it. There's the little board that you can buy for just £5 works via apps on either an Android or an Apple device. But you can also have it in a watch form. So the watch form in a watch, it's about the same size as an Apple Watch or a Garmin, and they're about £30.
Okay. And so without wishing to tarnish anyone that's got one, I mean, presumably the only reason you wouldn't want to be seen on a Ring doorbell camera is if you're up to no good.
Well, that is the case. But obviously, when these people are being recorded, they haven't given their authority for somebody to record them.
Right.
There is a legal obligation for you to let people know they are being recorded.
Okay.
And a lot of the people who have Ring devices don't have a warning up saying that
you're currently being recorded. Is it good enough to say put up a look? Because you see sometimes these signs saying CCTV cameras in operation or something like that.
Well, I couldn't say from a legal point of view exactly because these things are being challenged all the time.
Right.
And, but I think that the law does state that it's you're not supposed to film out onto a roadway where people are walking around who haven't given any authorization. So it's quite possible some of these, maybe the delivery people use them, so they're not.
Yeah, maybe they just don't like being filmed doing everything that they're doing, or maybe it's a sort of self-a saving face operation for them in case they do something wrong.
That could be the case, or maybe they're doing that as they're moonlighting as a delivery person.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, that could well be. Very interesting. Very interesting. I mean, I've literally uncovered an area of the world that I didn't have any idea about. Andrew, thank you very much indeed. What an interesting call. So Andrew says you can buy, for not very much money, effectively, a blocker of all of these Ring doorbells, providing they're not actual hooked up and properly wired into the mains, because if it's run on your Wi-Fi, this can be the effect. Fascinating. Carl in Croydon says, hello, Mike. Regarding cameras not picking up deliveries, some postmen lean over from next door and use the letterbox that way. Yeah, I don't think that could be done in this particular instance. I think this particular doorway isn't able to be accessed except by standing right in front of it. But we now may have an answer, which is fascinating. This is Talk TV.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
How about this? Mike Graham, how come you have to notify people you're filming them on your property, but there are millions of people filming other people and private property every day, posting it on YouTube and TikTok without any permission whatsoever? Well, I think that's true. Very interesting. Here's one from Phil who says, I've seen signs at Heathrow Airport, Terminal 5, where the airport is incorporated into the ULED zone. How will this work with cars and planes using the same airspace? Well, I mean, it's hard to stick a ticket on a plane, I suppose. I don't know who you send it to. Wizz Air, maybe? Better call for Russell Quirk. 0344 499 1000. Let's go to France and find out what the hell is going on there. Gavin Mortimer is there, hopefully taking cover from the baton charging, the tear gas and the fire. Gavin, a very good morning to you.
Yeah, morning, Mike. I'm still in one piece.
Very good. I presume you've got the right gear ready, just in case at any time you are required to go and join the fray. I was watching some of the footage last night. It's quite horrendous, even for France. But who are the people actually demonstrating? There's an awful lot of them. They can't all just be anarchists, can they?
No, I mean, the majority of demonstrators are an estimated 1.3 million people on the streets yesterday, Mike. So the vast majority are just demonstrating. Mixture of anger about pension reform that Macron fought through last week, but also just a despair at the cost of living crisis. You know, everything's going up, inflation, energy bills, your weekly shop, etc. But the trouble yesterday was caused by a far left group, Black Bloc, which are particularly active in continental Europe, in Germany, in Holland, and France. And there are about 1,000 of them in Paris. And they looted and vandalized shops, banks, restaurants, fought running battles with police. There were also incidents in Bordeaux where they burned down a town hall. They attacked a police station in the west of France. So, I mean, it was anarchy on the streets of France yesterday. The next protest is for Tuesday. That's the official one. But every night since last Thursday, so 8 consecutive nights in Paris, there's been violence. Over 350 police officers wounded. It's just been announced that King Charles won't be coming to France this weekend on his state visit, which is, I'm surprised about that, because you could say that's an admission of weakness on the part of Macron. Just last night, the government were adamant that it would go ahead. And so is this the first sign that Macron is worried? He spoke to the Nation on Wednesday and was his usual cocksure self. But he must have been rattled by the ferocity of what happened yesterday.
I think so, because, I mean, just watching the footage there of some of the crowds in sort of happier moments before the fires started and before the baton charging was going on, they all seem to be pretty well coordinated, but they look like quite a mix of people, different ages, you know, different types of people. They're not the normal, I suppose what I'm saying is they're not the normal sort of masked up anti-globalist types that you don't normally see.
No, absolutely. And that, I think, is a real worry, that the violence will spread from a minority or become contagious.
Yeah.
And when you've got over a million, of course, the million figure is the police figure. The unions who have been organising these coordinated, the 8 major unions have been organising these protests since January, say it was around 3 million in total. Wow. Across France. So that's a huge number. And it's really, Mike, it is ostensibly about the pension reform, age of retirement from 62 to 64, as it goes much deeper. It's tied back to the yellow vests of 2018. And as I said, just this general feeling that the country's in decline, there's an elite that is out of touch, that treats the little people with contempt. Mm. And this has been building. It's really since Macron took office in 2017. You know, he's not a man, as you know, who does humility. No. And he just seems to enjoy antagonizing the French. But has he antagonized them one time too many?
No, exactly right. Interesting times indeed. So presumably it's going to be a pretty hairy weekend if anybody's coming over to France. And will it spread beyond Bordeaux to other places?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wouldn't advise coming to Paris at the moment, because, of course, you haven't just got the riot. You've also got mountains of rubbish on the streets because there's a bin strike that's been going on for about 2 weeks, rats everywhere. So love isn't really in the air in Paris at the moment. And I think it is going to certainly continue. And that's what the government is scared of, but it will spread in the coming days and the coming weeks. And it's a very interesting time, very volatile time, and this is a story that's still got much to run.
Yeah, Paris au printemps takes on a bit of a different name, doesn't it? Paris in the spring. Stay away, don't bother. Thank you very much indeed. Gavin Mortimer there from The Spectator, reporting in from a very, very dodgy looking place at the moment, Paris, where the streets are burning, cars are being set on fire, there are nightly protests, running battles with the police, baton charging by them, firing of tear gas. I mean, if you're planning a romantic weekend, it's this weekend in Paris, I think you better rearrange it, because even King Charles ain't going with Camilla. They've postponed the trip for next week. They say it will be hastily rearranged, but things are not good over in France.
The home of common sense, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Got a couple of interesting messages coming in. One here from Steve up in Newcastle with regard to their ultra-low emission zone. He says, I had to get dropped off in Gateshead from South Shields, and after three attempts, taxi drivers wouldn't actually take us into Newcastle because they say it's not worth it for them. That's unbelievable. So, you know, these councils up and down the country putting in these ultra-low emission zones supposedly to stop traffic from going anywhere, but it means literally you can't go anywhere without paying an awful lot of money. It's madness, absolute madness. Let's change tack slightly, though, before we do anything else. Mike Sullivan is here from The Sun, Crime Minister, of course. Mike, very good morning to you.
Good morning,
you had
Michael.
A great piece in the paper yesterday about a new plan which has been put forward by the Police College, which would effectively enable cops to keep secret the names of suspects who are being investigated for some quite serious crimes. Tell us about it.
Well, it's actually to keep secret their names after being charged, Mike.
Okay.
So at the moment, police officers are encouraged to name suspects once they are charged.
Yes.
Until that point.
And that's normally when you find out who it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. Until that point. I mean, until sort of a few years ago, we were able to write or name a person on the point of arrest or even if they were being
right.
investigated.
But yes.
We can't do that anymore, and that does actually have ramifications because the police will often, we name somebody in the media and say it's around a paedophile offences or child sex offences, rape offences. Mm. The police will often receive further information, further victims will come forward.
Right.
And it's an important part of justice.
Right.
So this new proposals from the College of Policing, which is a training and policy body for all the forces in England and Wales, it's changing very subtly, but importantly, it might have quite widespread ramifications. They're saying instead of police should name suspects, they're now changing it to can name suspects.
Right.
And what they're suggesting effectively is really only in the very most serious cases, such as murder, rape, that the police should think about naming suspect on charge.
And so was that, and what's their reasoning for it? Is their reasoning that it's some kind of invasion of privacy
or
what? Yeah,
exactly that. It's a data protection laws which there's pressure coming from the Information Office Commission on the College of Policing and Forces to be careful about information. And I mean, it's the balance of privacy of individuals and the public's right to know. Now, personally, I want to know if there's a burglar or someone in my neighbourhood who's been charged with a load of burglars.
Yeah.
I want to know if someone's been charged with a child sex offence or, if, you know, to put it in my natural vernacular, if you've got a nonce on the manor.
Yeah.
I think that's important for the public to know about.
Right, because, of course, the other problem for this is that quite often many of these cases would take so long to get to court that the charge would happen. You perhaps wouldn't get the name, and then nobody would know that this person was being charged with anything until the court case, which might never happen.
Well, this is it.
What if they plead and somehow don't go to court? Then does it never come out?
Well, this is the whole point. Is once someone's appeared in court, then the names will be available. So it's only the police not naming. But the point is really that up and down the country, there are an awful lot of courts and local papers unfortunately are dying in their droves.
Right. You don't get the local court reports anymore, do you?
This is it. So we haven't got enough time or resources in the media to watch those courts for those important cases.
Yes.
And we rely very much on the police and the CPS to tell us when important stories are happening. There was one day before yesterday, actually, where a group of men who were charged with the most unimaginable crimes where they've been chopping parts of each other's bodies off for sexual pleasure all appeared in court before the police had even mentioned it. So,
really?
Yeah, so we weren't. And even
so you wouldn't be even aware of the case then in that case?
I was aware of the case. I wrote a story last year.
Right.
But they still didn't keep us in touch with it So and still didn't notify us until after these men had appeared in court.
It's a kind of creeping sense that they don't wish to cooperate any longer with newspapers, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to balance it. So, I mean, you can go to, I mean, I can see that one side of the argument, something like Christopher Jeffries, you remember the case, Joe Yates, where he was named after he was arrested and a lot of, he was hounded in effect, and there was a lot of pressure on him put by media. There was an insatiable demand for that. Now that is sort of one extreme, but so
that came as a result of them giving the name out, right?
It came as a result of confirming the name.
Yeah.
So yeah, things have moved on from there.
Yeah.
But we're now going too far in the pendulum swing too far the other direction.
Yeah. Because what it will also mean, if it was to go through, is that there will be some people, i.e. those in the police and maybe in the justice system, who know names of people, but the rest of us aren't allowed to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which can't be right, can it?
Exactly that. And it will be up to individual officers, police officers, whether they decide to inform the public. They may have something of the most utmost public interest, importance, about the sexual offender, as I say, or someone that was a prolific thief or burglar on a local level. I did a story recently on David Carrick, who was the police officer, firearms officer, who raped 13 women.
Right.
Now, one of those, the first woman to come forward, as a result of her coming forward and the police charging him in relation to the offences against her, 12 other women came forward.
Right.
Now, that first woman, the first victim, it actually laid on file because he never actually admitted it.
Right.
So if you imagine for a moment that Hertfordshire Police hadn't named Carrick in relation to the charge against that woman,
he'd still be walking around, wouldn't he?
He would still be doing it.
Yeah.
Exactly that. So these are really important issues, which we can't...
And the College of Policing are quoted today as saying that they're kind of possibly pausing this decision, maybe as a result of the piece that you wrote in the Sun yesterday.
I think so. They've probably been a bit stung, not by just us, but in the Sun there's been an uproar in amongst the media since these sort of plans have become known, and... a number of articles have appeared in different newspapers. So they've now, it's certainly not a climb down, but they're going to be taking on board people's opinions, and there will be consultations with the media, Information Officers Commission.
I mean, it is a good thing that you're standing up against these kinds of decisions, because it does seem as though the police at the moment, I don't know whether they feel embattled, but whether they kind of are being very defensive about everything. You know, obviously the Met Police report that came out the other day, Baroness Casey's report, mustn't put them in a good light. And I think up and down the country, police officers and police forces are in a bit of trouble, aren't they?
They are in the trouble. When you've seen what happened up in Lancashire, where they got a battering up there as well. And I actually have great sympathy for police officers who, decent police officers who go out and do the job. They're there to serve members of the public. They're not there to abuse and bully, and it's a slight
have to do what they're instructed to do, I guess.
Of course they do. Yeah, they go through. So yes, it possibly a bit of a backlash around the attacks. I suppose you perceived attacks on the police. I mean the Baroness Casey review from earlier this week, which was scathing about the Met. They surveyed 7,000 Met officers. And those Met officers were asked, why is it that people have got a poor opinion of police at the moment, or poorer? 93% of them blame the media.
Yeah.
So it's blaming the messenger, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, the media gets blamed for pretty much everything.
Exactly.
Isn't it? I mean, that is the tragedy.
Exactly.
Today you've got a piece in, talking of the police in the Sun, where basically a police horse is attacked by a terribly out of control dog.
Yeah,
it's a horrific looking set of pictures.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and really nasty. I mean, it's on the video. It's on the. You can see that on the Sun's website.
Yeah.
But it's a horrific attack. It went on for about 5 minutes. Mm. I mean,
and the owner of the dog's just standing there watching it.
Yeah, seemingly. I mean, he was too frightened, seemingly, to get him going, grab him by the female dog by the scruff of the neck. But this is an American bully dog.
Yeah.
It's a crossbreed. It's even more vicious than the pit bulls. They've been blamed so far for a couple of deaths up and down the country. So there's an issue there as well about whether we should be even allowing dogs like this to be wandering around in parks.
And it ends up being a situation where they'll say, well, you can't let any dog off a lead.
Which is nonsensical, isn't it, as well?
It is. I mean, and that's the trouble.
Yeah, tying all those dogs by the same brush.
Yeah, right. So as far as the College of Policing is concerned, Yesterday it looked like they were going ahead with it. Today they might be pausing. What's your hope that they'll reconsider?
I don't see why things should change. I mean, in effect, they can leave the advice as it is. If the police have got a jolly good reason not to issue charge details, such as a threat to life or national security, fair enough.
Right.
But in every other sense, they should be releasing.
And then the sensible thing would be to then tell guys like yourself so that you go, OK, well, that's fair enough. Then we won't look any further.
Exactly. But there's this perception of it. So Dalian Atkinson, the ex-footballer who was killed by police officers while he was under in custody, or a police officer was convicted, I stress, one police officer. But when that police officer was first charged, he and a colleague, the police didn't even release the details of that charge. It meant that the media missed the actual first court case and we couldn't name him. Right. So now that has got a poor perception.
And that's obviously deliberately done, right?
Well, you've got to wonder, yes. Yeah. They're protecting the police officer, one of whom was eventually convicted of killing him.
And they shouldn't even be allowed to do that. They shouldn't even be in the possible remit of the police.
Of course they shouldn't.
Absolutely.
Well, justice has got to, you know, not only must be done, but it must be seen to be done. That is an established legal tenet.
And a dangerous way to go for any sort of official organisation, whether it's police or parliament or anything, to kind of try and keep newspapers. You know, they might not like newspapers. A lot of people don't. A lot of people don't like journalists. But we're not here to be liked. The point is, you're here to do a job. You know, sorry you don't like it, but, you know, we don't trust you to do it on your own without letting anybody else know.
You put it simple, bang on the money.
Yeah, there, Mike Sullivan, thank you very much indeed. We'll have more for you coming up. We'll take some phone calls. And also, I'm going to tell you about some barristers who apparently don't want to practice law because it might upset them. Planks. This is Talk TV.
Times Radio sponsors Talk TV weather.
Fast Talk.
Street Talk.
Mike Graham.
Fighting the good fight with all his might. Providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid Talk.
Hot Talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On the app, on your smart speaker, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. The sky is blue. It's a Friday. There's a big weekend coming up. Lots going on. Hopefully, you've got some plans. Hopefully, the weather will stay reasonably spring-like, which is what it is at the moment. We've had a pretty fancy 2 hours already. Final hour of the show is going to include many of your calls, of course, but keep them coming. 0344 499 1000. We think we may have solved the mystery of the Ring doorbell a sort of ghost. It seems that you can block the Ring doorbell camera by simply buying a device which enables you to cut out the Wi-Fi, and then nobody sees you going up to the door and putting anything through the door, or even possibly walking through the door. So that's an interesting point already. We'll be talking some more about what's going on in France. King Charles has cancelled his visit, postponed it for a later date because of all the trouble that's going on there. They were due to go with Camilla out there on Tuesday. That's now not happening. Coming up in this show, we're going to talk about boxing, because boxing is right in the news at the moment because of the Tyson Fury mix-up, where the fight that he was about to have with Usyk after 6 months of talks with the Ukrainian 36-year-old, it's all off. It's all been cancelled. But we want to talk a bit more than just boxing. We want to talk with Gareth A. Davis, boxing correspondent of The Telegraph, and Talk Sport, of course, as well, our sister station here in Talk Towers, because Gareth knows an awful lot about boxing, but he also knows an awful lot about the world. And boxing remains, for me, one of the only sports really left which has been unwokeified, which has carried on being as it always was. There's lots to discuss. We're going to be hearing from Simon Jordan and Eddie Hearn as well, who had a big debate about a particular fight just a little while ago here at TalkSport. But let's say a very good afternoon to Gareth A. Davis. It's probably not good enough to pronounce you as a boxing correspondent. Boxing guru, Gareth, I think I'm going to call you.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mike. It's always great to be on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham anyway.
Yes, not at all. Tell us, first of all, I mean, there's Tyson Fury on the back page of The Sun this morning. He's not happy about the fact that this big fight, massive fight, has been cancelled. What's this all about, for a start?
Well, the first word is money. And then the second word is ego. And the third two words are because, or three words, because they can.
Yes.
Now, what's happened is, as you rightly say, this undisputed heavyweight championship of the world, the first one since Lennox Lewis and Evander Holyfield, with all the belts on the line since the very late 90s, 25 years we've waited for all the belts, hasn't been able to get across the line, scuppered at the 11th hour because Fury wanted a 70-30 split to have it in the UK at Wembley Stadium on April the 29th. And Oleksandr Usyk, who his management team revealed only yesterday, would have earned a third of what he earned against Anthony Joshua in Saudi Arabia about 8 months ago. About $9 million he earned then. He was only going to earn, he would have earned $9 million in April. He earned around $25 million, we believe, against Anthony Joshua. He wanted a rematch clause, and he wanted a 70-30 split for the winner in the rematch clause. Tyson Fury didn't want a rematch clause. Tyson Fury is the WBC champion. The WBC wouldn't agree for the belt to be on the line again until the end of the year. Mike, it's a right royal mess. And one of the reasons, like you say, it's a very primeval sport, boxing. It's very visceral. But it's also, when it comes to big money, it's quite ungovernable at times. There's no world sanctioning body demanding that the two best boxers in the world, in their prime, undefeated as they are, have to fight each other. It comes down to promoters, managers, and the fighters, both of whom here are very, very wealthy already, deciding that the conditions aren't right for them. Usyk's walked away one way and Fury's walked away the other. But the punters, the sport, have not got what they wanted in this scenario.
Right. And if you have bought a ticket for it, I don't know if they had even been put on sale.
They weren't.
So there's no damage to that particular situation. But it happens sometimes, doesn't it, where it's a pay-per-view, people have bought tickets for things already, and they do seem to just sort of have not a care in the world for the boxing boards of control, because there are so many different ones, there are so many different aspects around the world. I mean, I was listening to Conor Benn when he was interviewed by Piers Morgan a couple of weeks ago, and he's also the subject of some controversy, but he was basically saying, it doesn't matter to me if they ban me from boxing in this country, I'll just have my fights outside of it.
Well, that's a completely different case altogether. I mean, he has tested positive twice for clomiphene, a performance-enhancing drug in his system, once under the WBC CARES program, which you have to do with the World Boxing Council to be in their top 15 world rankings.
Right.
But also he tested positive under a voluntary anti-doping association test going into his fight with Chris Eubank Jr. last October, with it revealed in a newspaper article 3 days before they were about to get into the ring, that nothing had been done about it in the background. And therefore the Boxing Board of Control said they wouldn't sanction the fight. 6 months later, there still hasn't been a hearing other than him going with the Boxing Board of Control, other than him going to the WBC in a non-strict liability sense to try and prove his case. And he said the testing system is wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go on, I was going to say, we've got a little clip here of Eddie Hearn and Simon Jordan having a bit of a punch-up about this this issue itself on the Talk Sport show, the Jim White show, the White and Jordan show. Let's have a listen.
You are the king of hypocrisy, but you talk like you're some kind of business expert. We know how that went for you.
No. In order to lose a lot of money, you have to make it in the first place. And if you're telling me to make 100 million quid...
It's a marathon, not a sprint,
to make 100 million quid.
Mate.
To make 100 million quid out of one business in 5 years. No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No,
you went bankrupt.
No, I didn't.
What, Crystal Palace Football Club?
Don't be stupid.
Crystal Palace Football Club?
Don't be stupid, Eddie. I didn't go bankrupt at all.
Crystal Palace Football Club?
And don't say silly things that can get you into trouble, because I didn't go bankrupt in the slightest.
In that case, I apologise.
What I did was, like everybody else that has challenges in life...
No.
What I did was, as the biggest creditor... Because of the biggest banking crisis in the world, I took a view that I could no longer fund it anymore, put it into administration and wrote off 50 million quid on the basis of the fact that I made 100 million quid. So get your facts
I apologise. You took the club into administration.
No, I didn't take it into administration. A secured creditor put it in there and I had to take my medicine, which I've never complained about.
No, and
I've never bitched
and
whined about it. I've never gone about the fighters that ran off of me and I invested in them and started crying about it.
Well, you've cried about many things. No,
I haven't.
But also...
Never cried about anything.
But you sit there and you don't acknowledge any side of business. What I'm saying to you, because you don't acknowledge the situation.
Eddie Hearn there and Simon Jordan having a real dust-up. They actually had a proper dust-up, which we'll get to as well. Sorry, Gareth, about the Conor Benn situation. But, I mean, tempers run very high in this business, don't they? I mean, how many times have you been to weigh-ins where practically fights break out? You know, the contenders themselves sometimes get into shoving matches. I mean, it's an incredibly... I mean, I suppose I'm asking you, how has it managed to stay this kind of unwoke for so long?
Well, because it is, as I say, it's the primeval sport in the world. It's the toughest sport. It's a fight. And, you know, there's been competition with hands and feet and wrestling, kicking and punching and wrestling since the ancient Greeks. It was called pancration. And I think it's if you shout fight in the playground, a crowd gathers, right, don't they? It's one of those things in life. People rubberneck these kind of situations, and obviously pugilism, prize fighting, is a defined art. I think competition and contrition and rivalry have always been there in the sport. And I think we saw that with Simon Jordan and Eddie Hearn there. I think, you know, Simon Jordan has taken issue publicly for a number of years, really, I think, with Eddie Hearn's ability to get into issues in the sport and then get out of them. The Conor Benn one is as I was saying, and I think that wasn't the discussion there. It was more a Hearn attacking Jordan and Jordan putting him right. The Crystal Palace went into administration. Jordan didn't go bankrupt. But on that show as well, they talked about Conor Benn not yet going in front of the Boxing Board of Control, and yet Hearn talking about taking Benn to another jurisdiction to still have this fight potentially with Chris Eubank 6 months later, with nothing having really been done other than a hearing with a sanctioning body, the World Boxing Council, not a licensing authority. There's loads of loopholes in boxing.
And you have to remember as well, I mean, you said this before, Gareth, when you and I, because you and I have been talking about this for quite a few years, I don't want to say quite how many, but a long time. And, you know, at the end of it all, you know, somebody can get very badly injured. And if fights are sanctioned, which shouldn't be sanctioned, and if fighters are taking drugs, whether knowingly or not, which are improving their performance, it's not like running faster. It's like punching somebody harder in the head, isn't it?
Absolutely right. I mean, you must always remember that. That's that, you know, like you said, you put the cradle underneath this, that boxing or any fight sport, any professional fight sport, even the amateur boxing, amateur mixed martial arts, for example, they are all inherently dangerous. Mm. And therefore, when you, certainly in the professional field, in this professional milieu, you have to have a drug testing system. You can be legally killed in the ring or in the cage when you sign a contract to fight. Therefore, you need to be able to uphold the testing policies on performance-enhancing drugs, because you should not be able to enhance your body and go in against someone else. And that's why this case with Conor Benn and Eddie Hearn, it's bigger than these two guys, a promoter and a fighter. It calls the whole testing system into jeopardy. You have to have a testing system. It's so important.
Yes, and you have to be able to trust the testing system, and you have to be exactly able to trust, surely, that if you cannot fight in one jurisdiction, you shouldn't really be able to just jump the fight to another one and get around the rules because of that.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, if we go back to Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk, if you go back to any of these situations to look at it in an overarching sense, boxing doesn't have a world governing body. So there's no demand on the best must fight the best. It's down to a business negotiation. It's a sport, but it's very much a business, like all sports are today. They are huge entertainment businesses. But there are loopholes in the sport that can be exploited by very, very good lawyers. And I think there's a loophole that's been exploited here for Conor Benn. He hasn't proved his innocence yet, even though he proclaims his innocence in a strict liability sense. And that's what there would be if he went in front of the Boxing Board of Control. It's going to be very odd if he does fight Chris Eubank or Manny Pacquiao or Kell Brook, as is being spoken about in June, in the UAE or in the Middle East or in America under a different licensing authority, having not cleared his name with the Boxing Board of Control.
Yes, it will be very odd. We've got another clip from Simon Jordan and Eddie Hearn. Let's have another listen.
You called Eddie a coward.
Yep.
It wasn't a comment that went down too well with Eddie and his people. Why did you make that observation?
Because he was a coward. Not a coward in character, but a coward in his behaviour. There's a vast difference between the two, and I've qualified that on a number of occasions. So if he wants to take offence, he should get over it. He's a big boy, apparently. And if you're a big boy and you don't like something that someone says about you, you do two things. You either issue a writ against them for defamation, or you come and debate them and put them in a place. You didn't either because you couldn't, and you ducked it, and you did it with other people. But the reasons why I said it is because he's got plenty to say for himself. He is the archetypal walking, talking, singing canary when it suits him. When it comes down to a situation where there's a scenario where he needs to put forward his best foot in a situation which is shrouded in inconsistencies, misrepresentations, a load of them by him, he should have done a damn sight better than do a press conference saying, I'm not going to say anything, and then goes off and flaps his gums about what he is and isn't going to do, and then tells the world that the media misrepresented him. It's nonsense.
Well, I mean, that's all about this situation, isn't it, with Conor Benn? And where is that at the moment exactly? Is there going to be a fight somewhere else?
Yeah, I think there will be. And as I say, it's going to be, it's looking, Eddie Hearn has kind of announced that it may be June, that Conor Benn is back in training. But it doesn't seem ethically or morally right, as I say, given that there hasn't been a hearing yet, even though he's been exonerated by the World Boxing Council, a sanctioning body, I repeat, not a licensing body. Yeah. It just doesn't seem right. It will be a massive fight because it will be very controversial. There will be many people there watching it, Mike.
Lots of money to be made.
Well, that's the point, of course. That's why it will go ahead. But also, there will be lots of people saying that this event would bring boxing into disrepute in some ways. And as we just said just now, would just throw under the bus the veracity of having a testing system for performance-enhancing drugs in an inherently dangerous sport.
Yeah. And, of course, we've also had the kind of expansion, haven't we, of the sport. You were one of the first people ever to bring MMA, the mixed martial arts sport, to this country with your associations with various different organisations. And also, we now see the kind of YouTubers fighting, as we saw just recently. And that's obviously slightly off to the side, but is that as well policed, I suppose, and governed as it should be?
Well, I think there's, on the mixed martial arts front, obviously we've got the UFC, Bellator, Professional Fighters League, MMA, as they're all different leagues. Mm. So fighters are signed with those leagues as opposed to boxing having four world champions in each weight division. The best fight the best in those leagues much sooner, much quicker. And young people are following that sport now and complaining that boxing doesn't put the best in against the best quickly enough, which is fine, but it's a different sport and a different algorithm. But boxing does need to learn from that. As regards YouTubers and influencers, it's not really boxing. Mm. It's white-collar celebrity boxing. That's what you have to call it. Yeah. With people like KSI, Logan Paul, these huge, huge figures on YouTube for the young. They are the mainstream stars of today with 45 million followers. KSI is the biggest influencer in the UK. And yes, he's got a deal with DAZN, the over-the-top online sports broadcasters, to have 30 fights over the next, I think it's 5 years. Mm. 10 of those are going to be pay-per-view events. When they had the first pay-per-view event earlier this year, it did 300,000 pay-per-views, buys Mike. The audience was there from the very start to the very finish, but they need proper testing in it. There's loads of young people coming into that and doing that that sport, these influencers with millions of followers. It needs proper regulation. I think it needs to be looked at very carefully before someone gets hurt in that. But I'm not saying, again, that it's not sports entertainment, because it is for the people that the young people that follow them.
Absolutely right. And finally, the next big fight is in London, I believe, Anthony Joshua, April the 1st, next week. I'm told that this is his last chance.
Well, he's got to win, really. He's fighting Jermaine Franklin, who's only lost once to Dillian White, another British rival of Anthony Joshua's, who obviously fought Tyson Fury last April at Wembley Stadium on a huge night for British boxing. Yeah, he's got to win. He's got to look good. He's been in Dallas training with a coach called Derek James, who trains some very, very formidable fighters. Errol Spence, Jamel Charlo in America. They're great champions of the sport. He's done what Marvin Hagler said. If you go into proper camp, you're going into prison. Mm. He's gone into prison over there. Look, his star has fallen in a sense. They're rebuilding. He's on a new broadcaster, DAZN. We're live on TalkSport with the broadcast team, myself involved, next Saturday night. The red carpet event starts on Monday. Look, and if he wins, he'll probably call out Tyson Fury now, because maybe Usyk is going to fight, in my view, maybe Deontay Wilder, or maybe his mandatory, Daniel Dubois, who's also promoted by Frank Warren. And if Joshua looks impressive, maybe he calls out Tyson Fury. And maybe, finally, after 30 months of teasing and talks collapsing twice already for that fight, we never know. We might get Fury versus Joshua in the summer here at Wembley Stadium. It's a massive fight, a really big fight for the British public.
Yeah, tremendous stuff. Listen, Gareth, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Gareth A. Davies, boxing correspondent, boxing guru for The Telegraph here at TalkSport, of course, as well. There's all sorts of things going on between now and then, of course. Tonight, we'll be showing you something very interesting. We'll be playing for the week from 7 o'clock. We'll play a little promo for that coming up next, right here on Talk TV.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.